Welcome, everyone. I'm Lana. Joining me is Melissa and Tara. Melissa was on my show last year talking about how modern women need to lie to themselves. Created quite a stir. She runs the website thenewfemme.com. Say hello, Melissa.
I'm happy to be here once again. Thanks for inviting me.
And then also now for the first time, actually, Henrik had her on Red Eyes, but I haven't had her on. Tara McCarthy, also known as Reality Calls. She's from the UK. You might know her from her work on Pizzagate. And then she also has a new show called Virtue of the West with Brittany Pettibone. And I was just on that show last month, I think. So welcome, Tara.
Thank you. I love Red Eyes. So thanks for inviting me on.
So we're going to talk about love, relationships, and liberal women. But first, I wanted to get your take on what did you guys think of the ridiculous International Women's Day and all the marches that were happening?
Well, firstly, I thought it was quite ridiculous that they have this woman who is an advocate for female genital mutilation heading one of the marches. Really did not strike me as something that most women in America would be in alignment with.
No.
She's also an advocate for Sharia law, which again, as we know, makes women second-class citizens. Again, not exactly something that you would expect most feminists to really be in alignment with. If anything, they should really, if they really are pro-woman, they should be against this kind of law.
Right. I feel the same way. It's, you know, they have this International Women's March, but what about all the women that are being raped in Western Europe right now? Where's the solidarity for them? There's solidarity for everybody else, but no solidarity for women that are actually being raped in the West. So
yeah, and what are they complaining about? I mean, Western women, we have it the best. What is it that we don't have access to? How are we not equal? I mean, this is a bunch of garbage. I mean, it's really white European women who were the first to go in space, to fly a plane, the first billionaires. I mean, we've been able to do those things because of the European men that have propelled us and supported us, right?
Yeah, and it makes me actually quite sad to see how much women in the West don't appreciate all the things that men have created. You know, men have created just about everything. You know, walking down the street, they built the road, they built the pavement, they built the shop fronts, everything, the cars, the traffic lights, everything, like literally everything is built by men. And yet you'll have women who are so ungrateful and willing to blame men for everything. And that is just a really kind of toxic way to approach life, I think, and also very harmful to our society.
Well, women in the West have taken everything for granted. They don't really know what it's like in a third world country. So they assume that they sort of project their own worldview onto that. That's how the rest of the world is. And they're very insulated from any kind of real struggle. I mean, they're not starving. They're not, like she brought up, female genital mutilation. They're not being subjected to those types of things. So they have this worldview that is completely inaccurate. None of the luxuries that we have in the West are completely foreign to anything that you'd find in a third world country.
I want to switch topics a little bit and get into dating, because I get a lot of requests from people in the alt-right who want to talk about love and dating and romance and finding someone. But one thing that I've noticed is I think a lot of modern day dating, when I speak to a lot of young people, the whole idea of courtship and romance is lost. And people are kind of the relationship between the sexes is very odd when people are just communicating on Twitter and Facebook. They're not, you know, asking a girl out in person as much anymore. But what is your guys' thought? Is courtship and romance lost in dating?
Well, I'm a lot older than a lot of my contemporaries. This movement is mainly comprised of young people. And when I hear of courtship, I mean, is surfing Tinder and in the hopes of exchanging nudes and STDs, is that a form of romance? Because that doesn't That's completely like the way that if I talk about my values or from old school values or what have you, a lot of people think that what I say is old fashioned, and that's it's kind of a shock to me that they would think that just a normal relationship between a man and a woman is old fashioned, that there's no kink involved. It's just kind of a romantic thing, that there's no modern kink involved with that. They call that old fashioned.
I think it's a shame that this has happened, that there is such a breakdown of societal norms in terms of dating and relationships, which has led to a lot of degeneracy and I think also a lot of resentment on both sides, because it's kind of like men and women don't really know where their place is, so they don't know how to act. You know, it's kind of like two people trying to dance when neither of them know how to dance, and they're just treading on each other's toes, and it's just frustrating and not working. And so obviously both sides are kind of disappointed about I would say their kind of dating and relationship lives, generally speaking. That's what I hear a lot of in the comments sections on channels and on Twitter and things like that. And I just, as I said, I think it's a shame, but perhaps this is a kind of process that we have to go through. Perhaps this is some kind of phoenix burning and turning to ashes and then rising again. That's how I see it. I'm hoping that something better is going to come out of this, because you always have cycles of breakdown and regeneration. I hope that we can help build something even better in the future.
The kind of relationships I think of is the old school days, in the UK where you're from there, Tara, when a man would he would write letters to the woman, they were courting, they would really get to know each other. I mean, really get to know each other through words and letters, and you can do that, and people can do that online. But I find that a lot of people's relationships have become so shallow. I look at a lot of people that are not alt-right dating, and for them, getting to know someone is asking what their favorite color is or what their favorite song is. They're not asking the big, deep questions, are they? Let's talk about words of advice for young women looking for love in the current year. What advice can you give them? Let's start with you, Melissa.
I think scaling back the overt sexuality would be a really good place to start. A lot of young men are being inundated with these sexual images, just 24 hours a day, being connected to the internet, and women are just sort of putting it all out there. And in the past, I mean, things weren't as crazy as they are now, but I remember when I was on the dating scene, I just wouldn't even bring up sex or anything like that with men, and they were always really curious about me, like why I wasn't like that. I just felt private in that sense, and it causes it makes a man hone in on using his imagination, and men love to use their imagination, so keep a guy guessing about that. You don't have to be so sexual, especially if you're looking for real love. You really need to present yourself and not your sexuality.
That's right. You have to keep a little mystery. You can't just put
Right.
everything out there right away. That's never good. What do you think, Tara?
Well, my advice would be that, and it's not like something that you can just kind of do in an instant, really, but the young women today have been told throughout like their school education and probably from their parents and their peers as well that sex is just this kind of recreational thing that you do for fun, and actually it's an important bonding part of a relationship. So it's I think that it's important that you actually know what you want for the long term. If you want to have a family, which I think people should encourage young women to do rather than discourage as they have been, then it's important that you find a good, honorable man who you can marry and have children with and put your energy into doing that, rather than, just kind of having flings with men who aren't interested in that kind of thing. And there definitely are men out there who do want to get married. And some of them I've found are actually kind of shy about even expressing that desire because it's so unfashionable nowadays. But there is good reason to get married. It means that you're more likely to stay together and raise your children properly rather than having, you know, single parent families, which results in, you know, personality disorders and problems with the children.
I think, too, if you're a woman who's still trying to get to know herself and is very flighty and doesn't really know what she wants, doesn't really know who she is, that's probably not the best time to be choosing a man. I think you do need to kind of have your own stuff together, your own life together, your own house in order before you're ready to unite with a man so that you can come to the relationship and be whole. I know that men and women do complete each other, but there is a level of independently going through that completion level before that you connect with somebody else. You have to know who you are. I also say too that finding love is not a romantic comedy because all these women are programmed with thinking it's like a romantic comedy, right? But it's not a boring documentary either, is it? I think it's somewhere, truth is kind of somewhere in between, right?
Like my mom said when I got married, it's not going to be a bed of roses, you know, 24 hours a day throughout the years. You have to have more realistic expectations, I think. Like you said, there's all this sort of fairy tale, kind of whimsical idea about marriage when in actuality, you're picking the person that you're going to marry, who's going to be the parent of your children. And those things just aren't all that glamorous. I mean, they're beautiful, but they're not, like I said, it's not a bed of roses. All the time. You have to take the good with the bad and the boring and the fun in between.
Yeah, exactly. Daily routine. You know, daily routine can be kind of boring, but you have to find fun ways to keep it interesting. I mean, we're human. We have human things that we have to do. You're not always going to be goo goo gaga, you know, 24/7 when you're taking out the trash. It's just a fact.
Right. You know? Yes.
So what if a woman is 29? I hear this a lot from girls and freaking out because she hasn't met Mr. Writes.
Well, I think you better hurry up. 29 is still reasonably young. It's very young for a man. It's not all that young for a woman, especially if you want to have kids. I think that you really need to get it in gear and get your priorities straight because your 30s go by, you think your 20s go by quick. Your 30s go by even quicker, and before you know it, you're 40 years old, and you know, Mr. Right is not going to be knocking on your door, and men aren't lining up to date middle-aged women. So you need to step up your game and tie that knot. And you're 29, reasonably, you could probably still maybe even find a guy that you're going to get along with that you're choosing. Because you want him, not because you feel like you're in a big hurry to settle down and have kids before it's too late. So 29 is a really good age, I think, for women. They kind of have a more of a perspective on life. But you're getting up there, and you need to nip it in the bud.
I think women shouldn't freak out though either, because then it's again desperation, and then you're just clamoring to whoever comes your way. I didn't meet my husband till 29, 29, 30. So, you know, sometimes you can't rush it, but of course you can't delay forever. I think there is maybe a little bit of serendipity involved. So Tara, what do you think?
I've had a friend who was in the situation and she has found a guy in time to have children. But especially if you want to have lots of children, it's important to get married younger. And I'd say about 25 is probably the best age to get married. So that means you need to be about 23 when you start looking, seriously looking. And you are older, yes, you should get serious and find a guy who's going to marry you and be a good father and husband. That's all I have to say about it, really. And in terms of desperation, as you were saying, Lana, I personally think people should just be very upfront about what they want and just say, like, hey, this is my goal. This is what I want. What are your goals in a relationship? And And that is like the fastest way to find a good match is just to find someone who has similar goals to you.
Yeah, and seriously, a lot of the guys in the alt-right, that's probably the sexiest pickup line they can have. So I'm ready to get married and have babies. You want to do this? Seriously.
Yeah.
Also, we have to think in terms of modern day, there is things women can do. They can freeze their eggs. So if they do want to have an army in the future, maybe that is also an option. The other thing is I always tell women, go to a right-wing or alt-right conference. There's tons of guys there. A young woman can go and just really have her pick of the men. Anytime I've seen single women go to those, they always end up finding a guy. And not just any guy, but finding a guy that really fulfills them, that truly does it for them. So that's good. I wanted to give some advice to a lot of men and women when it comes to sex in the current year. So what could you offer for advice?
Well, I guess I'll go ahead and give my two cents. As I mentioned, just sort of scaling back on the whole sexual revolution thing. I think people should spend as much time away from this sea of just filth and porn and hookup culture and try to get in touch with their inner needs as far as what they need sexually, what kind of expectations they really have. Sexually, I mean, I'm probably speaking in terms of being a woman, because women, we naturally seek out a bond when we want a man to make love to us. We want it to mean something. We want it to be beautiful. And I would suggest to the younger people is to just unplug from all of that and get in touch with how you really feel inside about your sexuality. What sexuality means to be human, to be something that's magical or something that's beautiful or romantic. People have just sort of taken on this mechanical type of attitude towards sex. And I just find that so grotesque that, you know, when I got married, I was only 22, and I can't imagine like being out in this hookup culture where people just meet, have a one night stand and then that's it. Or they have like polyamory.
Yeah. There are a lot of people at the same time.
I mean, it's just so vulgar.
Yeah. You're really lucky that you found someone at a young age. You're very rare that way. Cause a lot of people, when they meet someone at such a young age, it's usually tends to be a starter marriage. They don't last the right. full mile, which you actually have, but you bring up a good point too. I think a lot of young girls, because of feminism, they're programmed to think that they can work, act, and even have sex like men. But women, we have this whole other emotional and chemical response that happens. You can't just sleep around and think it's not going to take a toll on you. So women need to choose wisely, and they need to Right. say no a lot more and be picky and have more serious relationships. And let's face it, a guy doesn't want to be with a girl who's been with a lot of other guys. No different than a girl doesn't want to be with a guy who's whored himself around and been with all the girls in town. I mean, nowadays, with cultural Marxism, that's just the norm. Everyone's just sleeping with everyone, right? And exactly, there's no mystery in it. There's nothing special in it. So, but the alt-right is different than that.
Right. There isn't even, in, like we talked about courtship, there isn't even people that are interested in like the thrill of the chase anymore, or, you know, the teasing and the playing and the, you know, I'm not going to text this person back for a few days, and just the tantalizing aspect of it. That's really sexy. And nowadays, nothing is sexy. Everything is just in your face. Everything is just out there to be had. And it's vulgar. It's inappropriate. And there, like you said, there's no mystery to that. And I think that's very, very sad and disturbing, I think.
Now, do you both think that women have lost their femininity and their softness?
I think it's kind of been driven out of women, you know. When I was growing up, I was constantly taught by people close to me, like my, you know, boys' stuff is better. You know, like the boys' toys are more fun, aren't they? Boys' clothes are much harder wearing, aren't they? You know, and obviously we didn't use harder wearing, but that kind of, you know, suggestion. And don't you like hanging out with boys? So basically, they turned me into a tomboy. They're kind of constantly pushing me to do boy stuff because boy stuff is better. You don't want Barbies, you don't want pink. No, that's girly. You know, so ironically, these people who are supposed to be like feminists, they absolutely everything that's remotely feminine, they're like, no, that's bad. You know, if women are going to be okay, then they have to do everything in a masculine way. They need a masculine style career. They need to practically dress like men, act like men, and talk like men, and be spoken to like men, and you know, be responded to like men. Like, it's now offensive for a guy to open a door for a woman because it implies that she's weaker.
Yeah.
So they tried to drive out all the differences between males and females. You know, now they're trying to make men less masculine. So they made women less feminine. They want to make men less masculine. And ultimately, this is just very R-selected. They don't like the polarity between male and female. But the polarity of male and female is something that's benefited our culture and our society and our civilization for thousands of years, if not hundreds of thousands of years. And it's something that we should worship almost, you know, all these statues you see, Greek statues, are of representing masculinity and femininity. They're worshiping those traits. And we should too.
Yeah, it's true. I don't even know why the word femme is in feminist, because they're not feminine at all. They've completely lost their softness. And I think it's because they're trying to compete with men. So they're kind of hardening themselves. They're putting on this act, trying to be like men in a lot of ways. Like, I'm an equal to man. I can keep up with the man. You know, it's ridiculous. What do you think, Melissa? Have women lost their softness?
They have. Our entire culture is pushing us to sort of take on the more masculine role, even in a relationship. You know, they want us to wear the pants or whatever to tell the men what to do. And every propaganda sort of message that's out there shows the man in a subservient position as opposed to the woman. The woman is the take charge thing, that we should all run out and try to be like or imitate. And I just... when I was younger, I guess I sort of took on that sort of demeanor as well. But I found out through my own experience, the less you act like that, the more luck you have with men and the opposite sex. The more the men are inclined to want to serve you, or I know that may even sound sexist, but serve your feminine needs. I mean, open the doors for you. They try to make that sound like it's something that's sexist when it's just being polite or being, you know, chivalrous, that kind of thing.
Yeah, and being soft doesn't mean that you're weak. A lot of feminists have basically said that, when there's actually quite a power when you're in touch with your feminine, soft female sides. You know, there's a great strength in that. And it also makes men want to step up and be the man. You know, so it creates a healthier dynamic. A woman is happier then. Why would she not want a guy to do certain guy things? Yeah. I just don't get it.
You know, I mean, men still open doors for me. They still let me get in the elevator first, on the escalator first. And I find that to be very complimentary. I find that to be very, you know, civilized and polite. And it makes me feel like a woman. It complements my feminine side.
Let's talk about words of advice for men struggling to find love, because there is a lot of these young, bitter guys right now. They're bitter about, they think all women are the same, that all women are feminists. They've kind of given up. They're walking away from women. What advice would you both offer those guys?
My advice is the more masculine men are, the more feminine women become. So women actually can't be feminine when they're surrounded by what has kind of colloquially be called beta males, although I'm not necessarily advocating the use of that term because I think there's a bit of misunderstanding going on. But when men are going around wearing skinny jeans, whinging about, you know, their iPhone or whatever, I don't know. it actually makes women, now this isn't completely subconscious, it makes women say, oh, There aren't any men around here to protect me. I'd better man up myself. And then women become more masculine, and then they're less appealing to the men, and the men are less appealing to them. And, you know, it all just turns into a bit of a mess. So men actually need to, I believe that men need to take the lead and become more masculine, even though it's difficult to do. And, you know, it may not necessarily be fun, you know, going and learning a martial art or, you know, disciplining yourself, that kind of thing. It's a necessity for our society.
Please, please, please just stop being thirsty. Stop white knighting. Stop putting women up there above you. It's just this culture that we have with the, like she was saying, the beta males and the thirst and everything is just so cringy and so uninspiring and so doesn't motivate women to want to pursue being in a relationship with man, with a man. It's like, just treat women like you did when you were in first grade. Pull their hair, tell them they have cooties, tell them they're ugly, tell them they're stupid, tell them that they're not allowed in the boys' club. Women love that. They love that. They love a man that refuses to kiss their ass. I mean, that is, we will go out of our way to be with the man that shows that kind of power, that kind of restraint. And with all these thirsty men, it's just, it's sickening.
You mean how they're just upholding women with this affirmative action, yeah, and a lot of feminist politics, that kind of stuff. Yeah. Why did they even allow any of that to happen? I mean, seriously.
All of this programming, all of this just sort of confusion just needs to be done away with. Because, I mean, we can't even... The women are the ones that are supposed to be thirsting for male attention. They're the ones that are supposed to be at home, you know, celibate and melancholy. And, oh, I long for romance, when it's the women that are now out screwing half the town and the men are at home online, you know, thirsting for attention from any woman that they can muster it from. And it's just apocalyptic to me. I have every woman out there feels the same. They have zero respect for the thirsty beta male sort of guys that are just all over social media. If they only knew what kind of contempt we hold inside for them, they would cease being thirsty and white knighting altogether overnight if they really knew how we felt about it.
Well, so I think it's kind of like what we talked about, how modern women, they need to lie to themselves. They need to be lied to be convinced of themselves, of their lifestyle, that what they're doing in this modern life is fulfilling, when really they're miserable. I was just reading statistics, you know, since the 60s and the 70s, women have just been getting more and more depressed since the so-called female liberation. I think the majority of women, and as we know, are happiest when they can just make things beautiful, be surrounded by beauty, take care of their family, take care of the home. I mean, women are genuinely happier there, right?
Right. We want a guy that can lead. We want a guy that knows what kind of role he wants us to play in his life. It gives us a sense of direction. We want someone that can, like Tara mentioned earlier with dancing, it's the same thing. The man, when in ballroom dancing, the man takes the lead. And that, I mean, that's what we desperately want so bad, is just a man that knows what he wants and what he wants from us and what we have to offer him, what he wants us to offer him.
And then there's also this misconception that women that speak like us don't know about anything politically, that we don't read, we're not intellectual, we're just, you know, tied to the stove and know nothing about the outside world. And that's where I say, you know, alt-right women are very different, because, you know, and as couples, because we want to be united, we want to be equals on the same page about politics, and we're kind of united in a bigger existential fight together. Women like us, even though we could be staying at home, we're still reading. Some of us are doing videos and podcasts. You know, we're very strong women. We're not your average housewife, if you will, right?
I agree. That there's this stereotype that the submissive woman is the one, like you said, chained to the radiator, is barefoot and pregnant. If only, you know what, if only if it was really that good, If I could really have that, I would probably be my happiest. Most women would, but that again, that's a heresy. That's a you're a heretic if you even suggest something like that. Now, I have that kind of relationship, and I've been married for it'll be 17 years. So I have that kind of man that inspires me to want to let him lead and do his masculine thing while I do my feminine thing. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, and see, and I always wanted someone who intellectually we were on a similar page, philosophically, artistically, being able to do the artistic things together was important, and I did find that, you know. But it took saying no to a lot of different people. So there's a lot of people that wanted to be in my life, but you that's the thing with women, we can be selective. We can choose the best, right? Well, in your mind, both of you ladies, what is the ideal woman in the current year, you know, emotionally, mentally, what's she like?
Personally, I think it's really important to be open-minded enough to listen to people's opinions before doing the whole name-calling and freaking out emotionally. And I know women are quite famous for being overly emotional. And I think that's an aspect of ourselves that we need to learn how to work with. So when you hear something that you don't like, you immediately get some kind of emotional reaction, which makes you kind of demonize the person who just said it. But that's really not a productive way to go about living. It's necessary for us to actually feel the emotion, accept that the emotion is there, and then continue the conversation and acquire the information necessary to make a decision about what you really think of what that person just said, rather than just freaking out. And I think that's something that's given women a bad name and something that women need to work on, while not rejecting the feminine aspect of being emotional, but actually harnessing that emotion in a more productive way.
When I think of the female archetype, I think nurturing and supportive. I mean, the women's love can move mountains. I immediately think of like my grandmother when she, I mean, how important and special and loved did your grandmother make you feel when she brought you homemade cookies, frosted and iced with little faces on them just for you? I mean, to me that, I mean, the grandmother's love and her smell and the way she squeezed your cheeks and everything, to me, that was like the epitome of what it's like to be loved by a woman. You know, those are memories that you take with you to your grave and then you want to pass on to your own grandchildren, that kind of thing. So in a supportive and nurturing role for her kids, for her husband, for her family, for her relatives, I think that's when we're most formidable in our femininity and in our power as women.
I think that's why it's so hard for women like us to be involved in politics and be around politics at a time. You know, it's really heavy. You know, I find that for myself too, because I'm feminine, because I have a female brain, it can be challenging when you're around some of these topics all the time. You have to step off and find just different outlets, because guys can be around it all the time, it seems like. But women being around a lot of these, you know, anti-white politics all the time, thinking about it all the time. I've seen a lot of women have, you know, mini breakdowns. They get emotional. They cry. It's very difficult to juggle politics with a female brain. But we find now we're in a situation where we have to step up. We have to fight back. We have to be shield maidens because we're being pushed to the wall. So this is kind of an emergency situation. So what do you both think is the best way to be able to juggle, you know, family and marriage and contribute to this this war that we're in against a lot of the anti-white globalist leftist politics?
I think that we really need to try to do things that we can do working from home. I do think it's very important that women don't just send their babies off to daycare or playgroup or whatever euphemism you want to have for having strangers look after your baby. I think that's emotionally damaging to them and causes some problems later on in life, as we're seeing with all these like narcissistic people in the latest generations. I believe that's the result of abandonment by your mother, which has been shown in animal studies, especially monkeys, for example, from being able to form close bonds in adulthood after rejection by their mother as a baby. So, you know, these kind of things that people might not think are very important actually can change the entire society. And it's our responsibility as mothers to make sure that we don't put our children through that, and to make sure that we give them what they do need, especially in the earliest years of their life, up to about age five. It's necessary for them to have a primary carer who acts in a maternal way and substitute minimum wage person who doesn't care about them. So I think that's the most important thing that we do. And in order to have financial stability in a world nowadays where, you know, you'll be fired from Goldman Sachs if you dare even donate to Donald Trump's, I think it's important for at least one person in the marriage to be working from home or to have some kind of independent income.
I think women can take on a supportive role, as I was just talking about, supportive. But if we want to be proactive about, I guess, sort of changing the system, as she mentioned, you know, maybe sort of getting involved with your children's lives. Like, for instance, I was quite the quote unquote Nazi when it comes to my kids' school. Every time there was something wrong, or I was down there in these teachers and principals' face telling them, this is not what you're going to teach my kids. You know, that that kind of thing. Women, in their own right, they can organize and go and get things done where they need to be. Like I said, at school, you can join your parent teachers association, make sure that you're actively involved in your children's lives, understand all of the activities that they're involved in. And then I know this sort of sounds cliche and maybe not so fun, but get involved with your local neighborhood mothers who, you know, they're just as vested in their children's lives as you are. And together, I've seen these soccer mom cliques sort of really change the whole dynamic of a community based around the children. So, I mean, we have to start from the ground, doing groundwork, grassroots.
I think you're absolutely right. Women influence other women. You have to be involved with the other moms. You have to kind of infiltrate some of these, you know, play groups, if you will, or PTA groups, and get other like-minded women involved in that to change the conversation, to change the view. And it's very important to fight in the school system. Education is a huge thing, and women are good watchdogs when it comes to education and just socially, what their kids are exposed to, what other kids they hang out with, who they're being influenced. Yeah, we definitely have to, how we raise our kids is the most important thing, I think. And then when they're a little older, you know, it's easier to be involved in other things. I know, you know, lots of women that can do a video here and there. They contribute in different ways. But when it becomes too much, then you step off, you know, off, and then you contribute when you can, how you can. But I think it's important in these days, not only how we raise our kids, but being more active in the community. I never liked saying that before, but it's true. It's cheesy, but it's really true.
Yeah, it's true, definitely.
So, thoughts on why the divorce rate is so high? I know, Tara, you asked me this when I was on your show, but I want to know what you think.
Okay. Yeah, I think it's cultural. In addition to the problems that there are with the law surrounding it, I do think it's it is also cultural, especially a lot of women. I don't know if it's so much men, but you see, for example, celebrities like Gwyneth Paltrow, you know, her husband seemed to be really dedicated to the relationship. They had like two kids or something. They all seemed like perfectly happy. And then Gwyneth Paltrow is just like, meh, I'll just divorce and go and do something else. She's bored. You know? It's just kind of, it's all working so fine. The lack of drama has made her too bored. So she's just divorced and going to do something else. Meanwhile, her kids are obviously experiencing what is blatantly a trauma. Children whose parents get divorced suffer from traumatic life changes and they have worse outcomes in adulthood. So it's really this selfishness, this whole, you know, your marriage has to be like something out of a fairy tale, rather than just like, yes, there's going to be some day-to-day drudgery. Get over it. That is part of being a parent, and it's also part of being a wife or husband. So I think that in some ways our expectations in that aspect can be too high, obviously, and our willingness to actually work on something and invest in it, and also, you know, to be selfless in some aspects as well, when it comes to looking after children, that's just a necessity, although of course it can be overdone as well. So, and then of course you do have legislation where it's like, you know, no fault divorce and everything. And the culture of divorce, of it being socially acceptable, and the higher rates of like atheism. So that there's no like religious reason to stay married or even get married in the first place. That's causing problems. And I say that as someone who's agnostic. And yes, it's like all of these things combined, and not only that, but it also seems as though the family unit in itself is under attack. That there could be tax incentives for people to get married and have children, but there aren't. In fact, there was even, I think, a marriage penalty basically in some tax systems. So it's just, we could do so much to improve the situation, definitely.
Melissa?
Like she said, the cultural aspect of it, divorce is being reined in. Throughout all of programming, there's always some comedy on TV where you can watch a family falling apart and the divorce is a laughing stock and the guy ran out cheating. It's never the woman that cheats. It's always the guy, you know, which is completely unrealistic as well. Along with all of these various systems put in place that incentivize divorce, women can get half of everything. They can completely, you know, just walk away from their entire obligations and stick the man with alimony and child support and basically live off the system. If a woman was forced to actually, she didn't get any of those things, and, you know, she had to work or something like that, there's no way that most women would divorce. There's a lot of women divorce with the dollar signs in their eyes. You know, I can get this guy for half of everything and I'll be like the first wives club on TV, you know, and just ruin somebody's life. And men have no recourse. I mean, there are ways to work around the system and whatnot. They can get prenups and things like that, learn game to keep their wives from entertaining that kind of notion of divorce. But there's also just an entire propagandized stream of information coming out, like that eat, pray, love thing.
Yeah.
It's encouraging women to go out and get divorced in the middle age and start over.
Because they were miserable all this time anyway, right? So.
Right, but how do you start over at middle age?
Yeah, that's a tough one.
You know, I'm approaching middle age and the prospect of trying to start over or pick up a new chapter in my life is terrifying.
Yeah,
like I'm glad I have a husband and kids, and you know, I would not want to be this age and picking up and starting over somewhere. That's so ridiculous.
Yeah, and then these women who are 40, they get divorced, and then they go and try and dress like they're 25, you know, and trying to act like they're 25 again, trying to go to the clubs with their daughters, you know.
Yeah, I mean, if women knew, like I was saying with the beta males of the white knightery, if men knew how bad that, how much contempt we have, if women knew how much contempt men have for women that show up to these 40-something-year-old women that show up to these parties wearing their daughter's clothes, do you think they would honestly go in there and try to hit on a 22-year-old guy? I mean, they look like they look like complete fools.
Yeah, and you see a whole lot of it. I think too, a lot of a lot of this programming that marriage is just so miserable, don't do it at all, this liberal mentality. And people have also become impatient. Their children, they're afraid of hard work, they're afraid of commitment, because that sounds a little fascist to me, right? So now they're just, don't marry at all, no hard work, we don't have to work through anything, I don't have to work on myself, and we don't have to work on each other. They're just lazy, really.
Well, the problem is, you know, like everybody has Peter Pan syndrome. And when you get older, your perspective on life really changes. The things that you think that you know at 22 are just, it's completely obsolete. I could not imagine trying to go out at this age and trying to date or do something like that. I mean, these people, they think that they're going to be young forever. And then the time marches on, and pretty soon you're an old fuck, and you're like staring down 50,
surrounded by cats. Right. Yeah.
You know, it's not, there's no glamour or glitz left anymore. You're just this bag of slosh and wrinkles. And,
well, that's sexy, depressing. Right? Okay. Very, very descriptive there. Yeah.
You know, sorry.
No, it's fine. I wanted to talk about how to reach, you know, female friends that are fooled by leftist politics. It seems like a lot of women are susceptible to liberalism. I still have some old girlfriends that I'm actually still close with, but they're very liberal. You know, they don't even listen to my show, you know, but they know about some of my views. And then I look at women like us, you know, in reactionaries or alt-right, and look at how diverse we are. I mean, Melissa's a Christian, right? Tara's agnostic. I'm pagan. And here we are having a conversation. And that's one of my favorite things about the alt-right, is we have a lot of white diversity, which I feel the left doesn't. They all think the same, talk the same, act the same. You know, they're the same. But what makes females in particular more fooled by leftist politics?
Well, I think that women are just prone to being very agreeable. So they kind of go along with the status quo, you know. It's definitely men who are more open to hearing alternative perspectives. And women tend to get a little hysterical if anyone rocks the boat. And I think that's just our nature. And I don't think that we should, you know, say women are bad because they're agreeable, because that's just ridiculous. You know, the reason women have this trait is for evolutionary reasons. It's advantageous for women to be agreeable. It means they're better at looking after children and forming a cohesive community. And it's men's role to do the leading in terms of, you know, steering the political direction and things like that. So I don't think we should really expect women to do that, because it just doesn't really come naturally to them.
I agree with what she said wholeheartedly. I think women sort of don't belong in that kind of role, I guess. We're, like she said, we're more agreeable. Therefore, but women, I think, they really don't understand how easy they really have it. You know, I come from a working class background, and my father had a plumbing business, and the kind of work that he would do, like, I think if a woman had to go out and do something like that, she might actually gain a real perspective of, a woman could never do that kind of work, though. I'll just say that right now. But if a woman went and had to do that kind of backbreaking work for 12 hours a day or something, she might actually understand what the real world is like. I mean, I was a housewife for a long time. I had no concept of what it's like to live in the streets or something, or have to, you know, do what men do to go out and keep civilization plugging along. And you know, we live very insulated lives. We've lived very comfortable lives. We live lives where, you know, sitting behind a desk all day is not backbreaking work. So, and that's not necessarily a bad thing, that women have these things afforded to them, but it gives them a very limited worldview of how cruel things can actually be out in society and out in civilization. So like she said, you know, we should be at home I'm saying this. We're in a more agreeable role so that we can nurture our kids, nurture our family, that sort of thing. So it's not really our job to go out and know how bad the world is. We're here to kind of make up for it in our own little way.
Most women that I encounter just out on the streets and going out and about, I find that they're not truly convinced either way of politics. I think it's a small sect of women that is actually quite hardcore liberal. There's a lot of other women that you can kind of sway them, and especially if there's a group, like let's say there was three of us and we were talking to one girl. We could easily actually convert her to our side. And I've had that experience because they're like, oh, okay, here's a group of girls. It's okay to think like that. You know, they're more prone to follow. I guess in our case, maybe we're a little different because, you know, a lot of people say, oh, women are more conformist. I've never been conformist. I don't know what it is that makes me different, but I've always been the one that just does my own thing and never follows. And you two are probably that way too. So have you thought about what makes us different? I know, Melissa, you've said maybe we have a little more male brain aspects or something. You know, because I find a lot of the other girls that are like us also didn't have a lot of girlfriends. They also were surrounded by a lot of guys growing up because women were catty and judgmental, and they just didn't do well with that. But now we're finding this new kind of sisterhood amongst the alt-right, where it's a lot of girls who are like us that are finding each other, which has been great for me. Now I have so many girlfriends, and they're all just amazing women, you know?
Well, you know what people say about all of the weaponized autism going on 4chan and things like that. I actually think that I might be a little bit Asperger's. So, and Asperger's is obviously something that focuses your mind more on the analytical side rather than on the social side. So I care more that what I say is correct than that other people approve of what I'm saying. So that often gets me into a lot of trouble because I'll say things that, and from a very young age, I've said things like, but you know, if that's that way, then wouldn't this be that way? You know, like logical consistency. And then people will kind of scream at me like, you're far-right extremist, you know. And so I've kind of experienced this my whole life, and I'm definitely wondering if maybe I don't have Asperger's, but I think I have some kind of touch of leaning toward the analytical side and caring more about truth than caring about feelings, you know. Whereas most women obviously care more about feelings and not hurting people's feelings and, you know, what will so and so think of us? Well, you know, we couldn't possibly do that. Whereas I'm the complete opposite to that. So I do think that I'm strange in that way. And I am like abnormal compared to the average woman, which is why I talk about this kind of stuff. And I don't expect most women to get it. I think it's more important that men get it. And as you were saying, men should really be the ones that just say, look, these are my political beliefs, and not really worry too much if women necessarily agree with them, because most women are actually apolitical and will conform to your beliefs, especially after marriage. Most women just go straight to being conservatives because they realize that they don't want to have huge chunks taken out of their husband's paychecks. So let's not worry too much about getting women to be, you know, on the right or anything. Instead, just make sure you don't marry a feminist because she's probably going to divorce you. But apart from that, you can expect that she will probably conform to your views.
Yeah, I've definitely been one of those peculiar people. Like I was in the chess club and the math club in school and stuff like that, and I would get made fun of by other girls or just kind of looked at funny, I guess. And like she said, this is way before they started diagnosing every child in school with some sort of mental disorder, but I think I might have had like maybe some ADHD or something. I never took medication or anything like that for it, but I've been called evil, I've been called strange, I've been called, you know, just basically everything by most women. But I've had a lot of really good female friends too. Like my best friend, she's been my friend for 37 years. So, you know, we're still friends, even despite all my crazy politics. She just sort of, you know, doesn't, she's just cool with that. She just sort of rolls with it. But I have lost a lot of female friends who they're immediately turned off by, especially if you tell them that, you know, you're a Donald Trump supporter. That's like basically, you just the worst thing you could possibly be to a female.
I think a lot of these women, when it comes to reaching some of our liberal friends, or if we have any of those left, because a lot of them do bail. I've had a lot of old friends bail on me because of this show. Like, you know me, like people I've known since childhood, you know? So that's when you know you're dealing with a cult here. But the few that do linger, I find that when I have conversations with them and I actually talk about the double standards and talk about where I'm coming from and talk about propaganda and how things are being spun, they actually listen and they actually comprehend a lot of things. And then I tell them, see, you're not as lefty as you think you are, because you're agreeing with me on a lot of these points. A lot of these women just aren't actually challenged. You know, a lot of women don't have these conversations that are very political with each other, challenging each other on these things, do they? But I mean, we can do that to reach our girlfriends, though.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. I think a lot of people are in their little bubbles, you know, especially if going through university, all the professors were completely leftist, you know, all the authority figures are completely leftist, all their peers are, you know, the ones that speak out. And a lot of the time, like, actually, like 53% of white women voted for Trump. I've said that about 50 times by now, but I just have to drum it in. 53% of white women voted for Trump.
That's right.
So it's not as though women are somehow incapable of supporting someone like Trump, who's a nationalist. It's just that they don't want to be seen as being, evil or whatever. So the media is very good at controlling them. The media is very good at making it appear that women are against Trump, you know, with the Women's March and everything. It's like they're promoting this idea that if you're for Trump, you're against women, or, you know, women couldn't possibly be for Trump, when the truth is, are for Trump. So, and they're too afraid to say that for fear of ostracization. Perhaps, you know, even just thinking in terms of evolutionary psychology, I think women fear ostracization far more than men do, because think about it. If a man got ostracized from his tribe, he could probably, you know, feed himself and find another tribe to join. But if a woman got ostracized from her tribe, she would just quickly die, and so would her children. So maybe that's what's at play here. Women are too scared to speak out, really.
But you bring up a good point, and I've said that too. The majority of white women voted for Trump. So I think the media is trying to spin it that, oh my God, all these women are feminists now, all of them. And really, it's a small group that's actually quite loud, and they really focus in on them in the media. The media lies. They know how to prop up an image that's just not true. I think the majority are not feminists. And when you actually talk to women and say, well, what does that really mean? You find that the majority of them are actually quite traditional and old world and quite feminine. And, you know, oftentimes I hear too that liberalism is feminine politics. And to me, it's a female brain that's gone mad. Because when I see, you know, thousands of Africans scaling the walls coming into Europe, I see a threat. And I think my feminine brain says, this is not a good thing. This is danger. You know, you have this lioness instinct that kicks on. I think that's a healthy feminine brain response. I mean, I have zero instinct to care for these refugees or migrants or invaders or pictures of these kids on the beach. Like, I just don't feel anything for them. So what are your thoughts on liberalism being feminine, as we're told?
I think the problem is that, which has been noticed by many people, and this is not my original thinking here, but I think the problem is that a lot of these women haven't had children. And especially in the United States, for example, people are very mobile. You know, they're very used to moving state. And I think a lot of them go, oh, well, it doesn't matter if California gets ruined. You know, I'll just move over a few states and I'll be fine if it gets ruined. So it's disloyalty to caring about your community, basically. There's also a problem with not thinking long term and just kind of living for today. And even women who are parents, they will express this attitude that they don't really care all that much about their own children, and often, you know, it's kind of like you're on your own kind of thing, so it's quite neglectful. But going back to liberalism, I really think it's kind of hijacked women's, you know, it's very easy to hijack women's emotions. It's very easy to show them a dead child on a beach and be like, are you really going to let this happen? Even though the real story is that because Merkel invited them in, they then took that dangerous passage, you know.
And he was just going to
Whereas
the
if we,
dentist.
okay, yeah, I don't know the actual story, but
Yeah.
if we just had strong borders in the first place, they wouldn't have even attempted it and they wouldn't be dead. So, and it's so easy just to show women a picture and then it's like rational mind turns off and hysteria starts. So again, that's where I'm kind of pointing out that we really need women to either step out of the way and let men do stuff, for men to take the lead and just say to women, like, sorry, we'll deal with the territory stuff. You obviously have no clue in this aspect. Yeah, and because it's just that's another point, actually. Sorry, a slightly different topic, which is that we do on to make rational arguments, and often these don't appeal to leftists. And I even saw in the WikiLeaks emails when they came out, they said things like, we need to up the rhetoric. You know, they didn't say, we need to make more convincing arguments. We need more evidence to support this point. No, they said, we need to up the rhetoric. They're all about rhetoric. They're all about slogans. They're all about, you know, provocative, emotive images. And they really don't have the truth on their side or any form of reason unless they're outwardly going to express that they are actually just like pro-communist, which a lot of people would be completely turned off by. So that's why they're constantly just lying and pushing pushing hypocritical truths and stuff just to kind of get people to go down this road toward Marxism.
Yeah, I think you said a good thing that women generally are not analytical, except maybe women such as us are a little different that way. But I think too, we've also had kind of a male influence. I know that my husband changed a lot of my thought process of kind of a flighty Pisces a little bit before the little dreamer. You know, then I became more solid. I kind of learned to think in a little different way. He taught me things about, you know, propaganda and conspiracy and things like that, that really helped break a lot of this hold of, you know, liberal type of thinking or feminist type of thinking. And I think that that's the problem with a lot of women. They don't think analytically, and they maybe don't have a male influence to help them to understand kind of how propaganda and covert warfare, conspiracy, emotional manipulation, those are tools that women need to be armed with. Those are things that you learn through age and experience and reading. And I think that a lot of women, we can teach them that. Then they can learn to see through a lot of that stuff. Melissa, what do you think about, you know, liberalism being called feminine politics?
It's very feminine. Liberalism exists merely as a subservient sort of position against the stronger, the more beautiful, the smarter, the wealthier, the more productive, the more physically capable. Liberalism or liberals are always seeking to extract resources from their betters. That's the tenet of liberalism. So, I mean, if they really hated us that much and everything that we were doing was so horrible, then why don't they just let us have our own country? Why don't they just let us secede and have our own little place somewhere, and then they can go make their own little utopia somewhere? Well, they can't do that. They completely rely on the host. That's a parasitical sort of, and where the feminine, I guess, aspect gets involved is they need someone to lead, except they're sort of turning on the leader. They don't they don't like what we have to present as far as leadership, and at the same time they want to tear it down, but they don't have anything viable to offer in its place. So I don't know how they reconcile that, but from that standpoint, it's very, very feminine to take on this sort of passive aggression. Oh, I don't want these people to have that, so I think I'm going to take it from them. I don't want them to have money. I don't want them to have resources. I don't want them to have their own freedom or guns or any of that. So I'm going to take it.
To me, when I look at politicians like Merkel, I think, God, she's masculine. Even her suits, that her pantsuit she wears, you know, but Hillary, they're male brain.
Yeah. If you look at her, though, she's always kind of, you know, she's just kind of looking at you like she's just going to jump on your back like a louse any second and just start sucking your blood, you know.
And then
she's not going to do it face to face. She's going to do it,
yeah,
you know,
when you turn around. Yeah. But then when I look at Le Pen, to me, she is embodying more of a healthy feminine point of view, because she's talking about like being the lioness. Like she feels like a lioness instinct when she sees these Muslims coming in, these invaders coming in. I think that's a healthy feminine brain response in politics. That's why I think a lot of these liberal women are actually quite masculine, or there's something's gone wrong in there. It's the feminine brain gone contorted.
Just to reiterate what Tara said, a lot of these people don't have kids. As soon as you have kids, that totally changes the dynamic of how you feel about being a conservative or a liberal. Almost everybody becomes a conservative after they have kids. So, you know, when you have your own vested interests in something, and you don't want those interests to be taken away from you, then you take on a more a sort of stance upon self-preservation. These people don't have anything to preserve. They don't even produce anything. So what are they going to, you know, what are they going to sustain? What are they going to save?
That's probably why a lot of our modern society and Marxists are really pushing, especially to white women, to not have kids for that reason, because they will become more conservative and grounded once they have children.
That's correct.
The other thing I think to draw in more women is we need more emotional propaganda. We need aesthetics. We need arts. Those things will draw women. I mean, they respond to things that are beautiful, things that are emotional. And that's something that the left has understood. They manipulate that. And I think if, you know, people on our side started producing more of that, more style, more flash, more emotion, we'll start drawing in the women. Would you both agree to that?
Yes, I agree with that. Women respond to beauty. Especially if you look good and you say the right things to them, if you make them palatable, like we can't go run around and just Nazis and all that. They're never going to latch onto that. But if you start making children fashionable again, or being a mom, or just, you know, that kind of thing, they really respond to that sort of thing, and not the upfront aggressive sort of propaganda that tends to come out of the alt-right.
I would agree that it's difficult, because in the way, you know, I like the straight talking that we get from people online, a lot of anonymous people, you know, they'll tell it to you straight. They don't care how you feel. And that's great. I actually personally like that. But I can see that most women, like, they're not going to be able to deal with that. And they'll just kind of freak out and you know, have a fit if they see that kind of thing. So if we do wish to bring more women into the community, then it's necessary for us to take a more measured approach. But then again, do we really even need that? Perhaps I think we need to win the males, you know. There are plenty of males for us to win. They're much lower hanging fruit than the females. So why not just go for the males, who will in turn influence the females?
That's true. That does happen. And I think, too, I've seen in the last 2 years a huge influx of women. And it's because of women like us. We're out there talking about that. And women draw other women. And that is happening. And I'm seeing it happen quite quickly in the last couple of years. And I expect that to happen more so. And I'm even meeting girls who are coming in who have boyfriends who aren't red-pilled, if you will. So it's not always just the guy or just the girl. There's all kinds of interesting scenarios we have here, too. And I'm also finding there's a lot of diverse kind of alt-right couples. I don't mean racially diverse. I mean, they found themselves in interesting situations that the woman wants to stay home, but she found that she's having to work and the guy is actually at home. I've heard of all kinds of interesting scenarios that people have found found themselves in. So it's the alt-right couple is quite interesting, and everyone has a different story and a different setup. But one thing that they share is the existential threat, the main purpose. They know it's important to have their children and fight for their countries and fight for Western civilization and European people. And that's the thing that's really keeping them very tight. I mean, that's what will bind a marriage, when you have an existential threat like that. And I mean, there's nothing that's going to make that couple get divorced. But last question for you. As a woman, do you both have emotional days where it's hard to deal with some of the politics, where it can become kind of heavy for you? And if so, how do you handle it?
I sort of went through this over an extended period of time. And when I saw what was happening with Europe, I was completely terrified. I was just horrified by that. And then the shock kind of wears off, and you kind of step back and see how unfortunate the situation is, but that's the reality. And it is horrifying, and there's going to be war over there. But as a woman, I guess I processed it many months ago, just seeing all the cards laid out on the table and seeing just how bad everything is there and how much worse it's going to get. And I just pray for those people. I pray for all of us. The West is hanging on, I think, by a thread. And we're facing, like you said, an existential crisis that is unprecedented throughout history. So it's going to take quite a bit of some reckoning, I think, on Westerners to decide how they're going to fight back against this.
And I think we have to fight back physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually. We need our friends. We need a brotherhood. We need a sisterhood. All those things are real important, because I hear from people all the time that are kind of having mini nervous breakdowns. And I find that one thing about them is they're very isolated. So they need to get around people like us to have that kind of brotherhood or sisterhood where they can come to, like church, basically, where they can talk about their feelings and have some support. And what do you think, Tara? How do you handle some of the emotions?
Is that I've actually experienced kind of the opposite to what you might expect, because a lot of people, when they get red-pilled, they then get black-pilled, which, you know, is a way of saying once they realize this information, they become very depressed. But for me, it was the opposite, because I was actually depressed before I was red-pilled, because I had such a nihilistic worldview. There was like very little meaning in my life. From a bigger picture perspective. So now actually I can see the bigger picture, and I feel like I have a purpose in influencing the outcome. So I actually find more grounded and like have a healthier if thinking about the world, and have better well-being in that sense, and are more resilient, you know, because I have a purpose and a goal, and I'm not just like nihilistic about things, because nihilism is really, really damaging and toxic, I think. And yeah, I feel more connected to my ancestors and my family members in that kind of sense, that can only come with recognizing, you know, the importance of racial differences and genes and everything that we like to talk about, that is basically banned from being spoken about. In terms of small things where I react emotionally on a day-to-day basis, I've had to kind of recruit some volunteers to help me out with things, because it's very silly, and I'm not sure if most people listening to us have this experience, but you know, sometimes I'll kind of be overly critical of myself. So I'll be like, oh, I don't want to put that video up because it's just not perfect enough.
We all do it. Trust me. Yeah. I hate watching myself back too. I think it's a healthy response that we're not, you know, arrogant about it. Like some people who just think they're so awesome and love to watch themselves all the time. We're not those people.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's really helping now. I have some anonymous, but not, I would love to give them credit, but for security reasons, they're staying anonymous. Anonymous helpers going around helping me with these kind of things that, from an emotional perspective, are a bit draining for me. And I know it sounds so silly, doesn't it? Like, you know, putting up a video or a blog post after you've made it. But I definitely think that there are kind of different roles in life, different roles for genders, different roles in any kind of business or in any kind of creative project. You need to have some people who are doing the creating and other people who are doing the editing and other people who are doing the publicization, you know. Somehow breaking things down into segments like that and having different people responsible for different roles makes things so much easier. It's like you can just do the bit you're good at and the other people can do the bit you get a much better outcome.
Oh, I agree.
So that's what I'm learning.
Yeah, an army has many roles to fill, and I feel that we're more effective when we come together and help each other out. And I see that happening with alt-right media. We're cross-promoting, we work together, we come on each other's shows. I think we're much more effective if we unite together as opposed to being kind of separate entities, and we kind of help each other fill different roles, and people volunteer to do, maybe they're not talented in editing, but they like to do other grunt work. Or exactly, you have to do according to what your talents are, because some people's talents are lost when they get stuck in the tedious kind of grunt work, and then they can get kind of depressed about it, you know, and then lose the spark. Whereas other people, they're like, I love doing admin work. Let me do that for you. So yeah, don't feel bad about that. I think that that's smart. That's an efficient way. And in the long run, you'll feel better, do better. You'll have more energy. I also like what you said earlier about how when you were red-pilled, if you will, you felt kind of liberated and free. And it's true, because you're armed with the truth. You learn the truth. And for me, I found like a real family, real tribe. It wasn't so isolated anymore. A lot of the dots were kind of connected for me and things made sense. It is an empowering type of thing too, and truly liberating. And that's where I think the left is going to lose, because we actually have something to offer people that is fulfilling, that is liberating, and it is very much even a spiritual experience for a lot of people. And the left just doesn't have that anymore, do they? They just don't have anything to give or offer people anymore.
Yeah, and I also just wanted to reiterate how that kind of method of working and creating a project, for example, is the same with a family. You know, it's much better when you have one person who does most of the cooking, most of the cleaning, most of the childcare, and one person who does most of the income, you know, or the job or whatever it is. It just makes everything easier when people know what their role is, rather than, you know, you can just imagine the number of arguments that these couples who are trying to both be men have, you know, over who's going to do the washing up tonight. You know, it's like, because they don't have their just natural roles that they can just fall into.
Yeah, and also it doesn't mean just because a woman usually, you know, does the dishes or cooks, doesn't mean that the guy doesn't help, you know. I'm lucky because in my family I was surrounded by Renaissance men, and I'm still married to one of those who can, you know, that knows how to cook and knows how to clean and isn't an idiot. And I think women are, especially women in the alt-right, are attracted to that, because then when they do need backup for certain things, a guy knows how to wash and fold his own underwear, because let's face it means a turnoff if he can, right?
Competence is always attractive, definitely.
Well, ladies, I want to thank you for your time today, but I want you guys to share your website. So I guess, Tara, we'll start with you. Tell us what you do, how people can reach you, all your websites.
Yeah, well, we do lots of interviews for our show, Virtue of the West, which you can find just by searching Virtue of the West on YouTube. Everything I do is pretty much on my website, realitycallsshow.com. And I spend a lot of time on Twitter as well, if you want to catch me at realitycallsco.
Find me at, I'm at thenewfem.com, and my Twitter is thenewfem, twitter.com/thenewfem.
All right. Thank you, ladies. It's been a blast, and we'll have to do this again sometime. So thank you.
Thanks, Lana.
Thank you.